Good afternoon. This is Richmond Independent Radio News for Friday, July 15th, 2005. I'm Lauren Ball. This week, we speak with City Councilman Chris Hilbert about Richmond's violent crime issues.
Until that murder rate is down, it's not acceptable that the other violent crime rate is down. Yes, that's good, but that's not good enough.
We'll also hear what Mayor Douglas Wilder had to say about the situation at City Jail.
You need to have more supervision. You need to have more involvement. And if it's not done, the people should be fired.
And we'll find out what the riders at Spokes for the Cure are up to this weekend. Those stories and more coming up after these headlines.
For WRIR News, I'm Matt Beckwith. Three staff separations earlier this month, starting on the 7th of July, seem to be part of an overall house cleaning down at City Hall. WRIR's Jarrett Rest reports.
Nancy Ross, Interim Coordinator of Human Services, Daisy Weaver, Interim Coordinator for Finance, and John Woodward, Economic Development Director, were all separated from city employment between the 7th and 11th of this month. These separations are connected with others in March and earlier this year as part of an ongoing effort by the city to streamline operations and save money, an effort that has been spurred by reports from two mayoral committees this month, which found inefficiencies in the city's employment classification system and the system for disciplining employees who do not follow proper procurement procedures. Such procedures are extremely important as most of the over $500 million in annual spending by the city falls under this category of procurement. Mr. Bill Farah, press secretary to Mayor Wilder, clarifies the reasoning behind the separations.
The correlation between those two studies and the staff changes that are taking place really have to do more with the structure. It's not always as black and white as being hired and fired. It's not always the case that someone wasn't performing or didn't do well.
Savings will not be immediate.
It's just not, unfortunately, as simple a matter as flipping a switch and starting to save money.
So the city may have to look elsewhere to satisfy its $14 million savings requirement from this year's budget. Some searches to fill vacated and new positions are still active, and former city employees as well as others will be considered. The city government hopes to make an announcement next week on the new economic development director. For WRIR, I'm Jared Ress at City Hall.
On July 12th, Mayor Douglas Wilder announced that he is forming a panel to deal with the issues plaguing Richmond City Jail. Overcrowding and deteriorating facilities at the jail have recently led to many problems, from leaky roofs to security breaches and inmates being murdered within jailhouse walls. The jail committee will be focusing on the issues facing the existing jail and evaluating the future needs of the city for the incarceration of prisoners. There have been many questions raised as to how the jail came to be in such a state of disrepair. Third District City Councilman Chris Hilbert says that council has consistently provided funding for the jail's operation.
I'm very concerned about the fact that we have allocated monies. Previous councils have done that, and we did this again this year with the budget to address some of these items, and that they all have not been addressed. It can be frustrating when you put something in the budget that doesn't mean that it instantly happens.
At a press conference earlier in the week, Mayor Douglas Wilder indicated that there should be accountability for the lapses at the jail and criticized the way in which City Council has handled this problem. We will have more on the mayor's comments later in the program. Richmonders love to eat out, and it's well known that Richmond has more than its share of restaurants, from your local sandwich shop to the corner bistro. Essential to each of them are its suppliers: beer, wine, fresh meats, fish, dry goods, and produce. Wednesday night, the warehouse of Loving's Produce, the metro area's largest supplier of fresh produce to restaurants, was destroyed in a two-alarm blaze. WRIR's Dustin Richardson has the story on how this affects the Richmond food service industry.
As kitchens all over the city prepare for yet another busy weekend of brunch, lunch, and dinner rushes, many chefs are beginning to worry. Inventory of fresh food items like produce are intentionally kept low and often ordered daily to ensure that only the freshest food is served. And most of Richmond's restaurants order their daily produce from just one company, Loving's Produce, whose warehouse and main distribution center was decimated by a fire during the thunderstorm last Wednesday night. No one knows for sure what caused the blaze, which took 40 firefighters more than 3 hours to put out, but one thing is for sure, there will be no deliveries for weeks. The Shaco Bottom business is no stranger to tragedy. The wall by the second floor stairwell in the centuries-old warehouse used to have a small plaque showing the high water mark during Hurricane Agnes in 1972. The building had also been flooded in 69 during Camille, and last year during Gaston, washing thousands of lemons down 17th Street. But even then, their famous multicolored delivery trucks were making the rounds within a couple of days. No disaster has ever damaged the company as much as this fire. As investigators try to find the cause of the blaze, restaurants all across Central Virginia are struggling to find produce to fill their cupboards before they run out. Chrissy Lozano, one of the chefs at the Bamboo Cafe, a small but busy restaurant on Main Street in the Fan, had to get a little creative with her ordering.
So we have to order a lot of stuff to last the whole week from the corporate place. That's, we've got a guy that comes in from Hanover maybe a couple times a week, and we don't know when we're going to see him. So we just kind of have to hold our breath and wait for him to show up. Maybe he'll have enough to get us through the week.
Now she, along with hundreds of other cooks around Richmond, will have to make do with what is available and hope that Loving's Produce will be back in business soon. For WRIR, I'm Dustin Richardson in The Fan.
Richmonders are now being afforded even more mobility within the city limits as GRTC buses are now bike-friendly. WRIR's Nancy Lee has more.
This week, another success in Richmond's transportation renaissance as the GRTC announced its long-awaited Rack and Ride program. In an effort to promote alternate commuting methods and to provide cyclists with access to the extensive GRTC transit system, two bike racks will be installed on the front of all city buses. Richmond now joins the ranks of cities like Seattle, Austin, and Charlottesville, all who have seen major success with similar programs. GRTC hopes to have the racks installed on their entire bus fleet by August 1st. No additional fare will be charged for riders bringing bicycles. For WRIR, I'm Nancy Lee.
This is WRIR News.
For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball. Do you have a bike you're about to throw out? Need a bike to get exercise, see the city better, and avoid traffic, gas prices, and parking tickets? Instead, donate or get a bike from Spokes, a nonprofit effort to get people onto affordable bikes and make money for breast cancer research. WRIR's Christopher Maxwell caught up with Aaron Briggs at Spokes' latest fundraiser Thursday night in downtown Richmond.
Aaron Briggs and an entire bar full of patrons are celebrating Community Chest Night at the Capitol Ale House in downtown Richmond. For each draft beer purchased, a dollar is donated to a nonprofit. In this Thursday case tonight, the donation went to Spokes. Spokes has raised over $4,000 so far during a 500-plus-mile trip to New York City from Richmond for breast cancer research. A team of 20 bicyclists rode about 70 miles a day for 10 days. Aaron and several other people will be working to be ready for Saturday, July 16th, when they will have about 20 bikes prepared to sell and will provide what they are calling a crucial clinic to teach people the basics of bike repairs and maintenance. Aaron Briggs, one of the founders of Spokes, told me about their fundraiser that night, the bike clinic coming up Saturday, and their fundraising ride to New York City.
Even my closest friends have said the same thing. They're like, I didn't think I liked biking, and then I got a decent bike from you, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, biking is actually fun. We'd like to emphasize that there's a simplicity about biking. You need to know a few basic things, and for the most part, it's just as good exercise, a form of transportation as jogging is, than anything else. But the best part was showing up in different cities and seeing how people were really excited about what we were doing. and that they had put their own time and effort into supporting us. Because they weren't in Richmond seeing what we were doing and how we were preparing for this, but they were still willing to help us out. We would roll into a town and they were like, you don't look like bikers. And it's like, well, the majority of us aren't necessarily, but that doesn't mean that you can't do it. We started out with 3 and ended up with 20. Yeah. So, yeah, it was pretty consistent. We had a lot of people jump on the trip pretty immediately, and, you know, the people that decided not to go, then we'd have somebody else who wanted to go. So, like, the whole time we were thinking we'd have about 20 riders, and then that's exactly what happened. We had 20 people bike into New York. There was a lot of times where you couldn't see all the riders because they'd be miles ahead. And then we would get into really rural areas of Pennsylvania where all of a sudden everything was flat and the road was flat and you could see all 20 of us on the same road together. And that was one of the best parts. It's seeing us all do this, you know, as a team. We relied on everybody to provide their own bicycles that were going to make it, but at the same time, we had enough people on the trip that knew how to fix bicycles. If something was wrong, then it would be fixed by the next day and you'd be ready to go. And that happened quite a few times. We're just really interested in getting as many people on bicycles as possible. I think Richmond is a great place to utilize bicycling as a mode of transportation, and you know, it's fun. So. There's no reason not to, and we'd like to provide as many opportunities for people to ride bikes as possible. If they don't want to ride a bike because they don't think they can afford it, then we'd like to provide cheap bikes. Or if they don't want to ride a bike because they don't feel like they can repair or maintain their bike, we'd like to teach them. If it doesn't seem like something's working on your bike, bring it in. We'll probably be able to figure out what's wrong with it and tell you and show you what you need to do to get it fixed up. Either that or the basic things that might seem difficult to some people, but actually it's just a matter of sitting down and learning it, and then you know, you're good to go. People are definitely going to be bringing things to the clinic. I'd say we have 20 bikes ready right now, and we're looking for more. That's the best part about it. We've gotten a lot of help from all the volunteers in the community, and people are not only willing to donate their bicycles to us, but their parts and their labor and their time. And we've been solely working with used parts. We've been really resourceful. So it takes a lot more time and energy, but we've got a lot of good people working on it.
You can join Erin Briggs and her band of biking and breast cancer cure enthusiasts for the Crucial Clinic Saturday, July 15th at Chop Suey Books.
For WRIR, this is Christopher Maxwell in downtown.
Since the passage of the budget on the first of this month, things have been pretty quiet around City Hall. That is, until this week. Last Wednesday, at a press conference, Mayor Douglas Wilder fired the first salvo at council in a new debate over the future of city jails. WRIR's Dustin Richardson has more.
Mayor Douglas Wilder announced on Wednesday the formation of a 6-member panel to research options on the future of the city's aging correctional facilities. This follows several incidents down at the jail, including a homicide committed by one inmate against another. Wilder said that the crumbling facilities are a danger to the 1,500 inmates as well as the rest of the city.
The recent circumstances, I need not tell you what they are, have demanded that a thorough examination of all matters relative to current and future prisoner incarceration in the city of Richmond be undertaken as soon as possible. We got to protect 1,500 people who are there as far as inmates, but well as the security of the general public, which depends on the strength of its walls and its operations. We got to fix it so that people who are there, guards and prison personnel, are likewise afforded safety. What I've never understood, as I've said it maybe simplistically, you could always have had the locks if you had to go to the hardware store and just make certain you just locked them up. It wouldn't have been the most expensive thing. I think one of the concerns that I have is how you can have that lack of security with so many of the inmates knowing it and being able to take advantage of it.
He also said he'd be willing to consider drastic changes to the way the jails are managed.
What I want them to do is to look to what the current problem is. Would there be a need for a public-private partnership arrangement
relative to a jail should there be a privatization totally of the jail.
Another possible option up for discussion is how to reduce the number of inmates in the overcrowded system. According to Wilder, one of the problems crippling the efficiency of the system is the number of prisoners being held on minor infractions.
One of the things we're going to be recommending, that's why you see some of the people from probation and parole, do you need to lock up everybody that's in technical violation of parole?
The panel consists of the city's police chief, Rodney Monroe, and several state and federal corrections and parole administrators. Noticeably absent is anyone from the sheriff's office, the body in charge of the jails.
They might very well be a part of the problem. And to the extent that they would come and want to participate, they will be. They'll be asked. They'll be witnesses. They will be people who will provide reasons for certain things.
In what looks to be a trend in the Wilder administration's management style, Wilder focused on cutting the fat from the sheriff's office payrolls where needed.
You need to have more supervision. You need to have more involvement in terms of looking at where the prisoners are, how they're housed, and on a regular basis. If you're supposed to be doing that on patrol for every hour, do it. And if it's not done, the people should be fired.
He continued to state that much of the blame lies with the city council's unwillingness to properly fund rehabilitation of the system in years past, and that safety and security have not been priorities.
Just the issue of the locks. That's never been a priority, as far as the current administration is concerned. I could never understand why it wasn't a priority. When funding was requested and when monies were allocated, I think that was listed as a 4 or 5 in terms of priority. It's not a put-down of the people, but they could very well, as I said, be a part of the problem. And if they're not, then the reasons are, why is it as it is today, and why are we in the situation that we are today?
But 3rd District Councilman Chris Hilbert stated that funding is not necessarily the problem, and that council has been doing all they could to address the situation.
When you put something in the budget, that doesn't mean that it instantly happens. But we are talking about priorities, and when you're talking about public safety, we're also talking about safety within the jail.
Wherever the solution lies, this issue will most likely be yet another proving ground in the ongoing power struggle between council and the Wilder administration. Wilder's jail review panel will announce their findings in December. For WRIR, I'm Dustin Richardson at City Hall.
Ever notice how other radio stations think about music and news?
Sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear.
Ever wonder where their programming decisions are made?
We are controlling transmission.
At WRIR, we think the community should be a big part of the station. To find out how you can participate in creating the future of Richmond Independent Radio, log on to WRIR.org.
You are about to participate in a great adventure.
And if you like what you hear on the air, tell a friend.
Are you unemployed, laid off, or looking for a change in career? The Richmond Career Advancement Center, a certified one-stop career center, holds information sessions at 9:30 a.m. every Tuesday at the East District Family Resource Center, located 2405 Jefferson Avenue, and every Wednesday at the Richmond Career Advancement Center, 201 West Broad Street. We're open from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. For more information, call 780-4146.
For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball. On July 5th, 3rd District City Councilman Chris Hilbert issued a press release on the subject of violent crime in the city of Richmond. In the wake of a July 4th weekend double homicide, which took place in his district and claimed the lives of two brothers, Sean and Antonio Baskerville, Hilbert's public statements reflected a feeling of urgency. Richmond has seen a rash of murders in the last month, occurring at a rate that puts the city on a course to exceed even last year's total, which was 94. This week, the Richmond Police Department released data that confirmed the city's high murder and violent crime rates, but which also pointed to an improved rate of case clearing. Richmond police are making more arrests and more homicide cases than they were a year ago. In the 54 murders committed this year in the city of Richmond, the Richmond police have cleared 67%, as opposed to 37% of the 52 murders by this time last year. Chris Hilbert spoke with WRIR on Wednesday in light of the new data, but with recent murders in his home district still at the forefront, illustrating the dire need for solutions to Richmond's high crime rates.
Well, we had a double murder in my district on Bancroft Avenue, and it was two brothers that were murdered, a very tragic situation. They left behind three children, Their mother was devastated by this event, and it shocked the neighborhood as well. Obviously, there have been other people that have been murdered in our city. We've had a triple murder. It's just been a difficult year. I will say, however, that something that gives me a little bit of optimism is that people are being arrested now, and I am grateful for that. We could have people who murder more than one person out there, so the fact that people are being taken off the streets, I think, is making us safer in the long run, but that's little comfort to the families that are being affected by the crime that's there today. This is the number one priority that I have for the city. I think that some people have said it's crime and education, but I have said that crime is the number one problem because it's here today. People are being threatened by it, intimidated by it, and we just have to address the crime that's here today. I'm very much an advocate of education, but that is more of a longer-term solution to this crime situation. A lot of the murders that we do see in the city are drug-related. So that's a little bit of a different situation. It is confined to certain areas for the most part, and so it needs aggressive police action in those neighborhoods. And I'm excited about our new sector program, the community policing, geo-based policing, that the new police chief, Monroe, is instituting. I'm excited that we have someone with the experience in that area and the political courage and will to carry forward on it. I think that there is certainly accountability within the police department. I think he has let people know that there will be accountability. Going forward, the actual geo-based policing program has not gone into effect. It will come August, but I'm very much a believer in it. I think it builds trust on the side of the residents because they see the police not just when someone is shot or when someone is being arrested, but day in and day out, and there's a trust factor that's created by that relationship. And on the other hand, I think that then the police can differentiate between who's on their side and who isn't. And I just think it's a great thing. And I've heard from so many community leaders that have had the chance to speak with Chief Monroe that they are impressed with him. He came out to their meetings, civic associations or nonprofits that are involved in social service activity. He has agreed to meet with them, to speak at their events. He really understands people's situation, and he, like myself, has had a murder in his immediate family. His sister was murdered via a domestic violence issue. So he appreciates the pain that causes the family members, as well as I do. And it's just when it hits that close to home, it makes you think about it a little more seriously, and we know the long-term consequences of it.
As far as preventative measures, community policing and education and outreach in the community, how do you see that we can improve that?
We need to provide alternatives for people who have found themselves in trouble, and that would be prisoners who are being released into the community. If we provide them no alternatives, then they are going to return to a life of crime. So I would like for the city to try and help individuals with employment, not direct employment, but trying to assist them in any way of finding legitimate employment. Because if we don't, if we back people into a corner, if we don't provide them a means to get housing, to get a job, then they're going to go back to what they were doing before, and that's not in anybody's interest that happen. With education, I think that's another prevention measure. We have an unacceptable truancy rate in our city, and that function is being transferred from the school system to the city. And so, therefore, the days of, and I've done plenty of it, criticizing the way things were. We're taking responsibility for it now. We need to take on blight as a preventative measure. I'm very much a believer in the broken window theory. That is a theory that has been espoused that says that once blight takes over in an area, when you have trash strewn about, when you have unkempt properties, that this creates an atmosphere of lawlessness, that the rules no longer apply in this neighborhood, and that is certainly not acceptable. I think we did something today with a property in my neighborhood to tell the owner that this is not acceptable, that you cannot not pay your taxes, that you cannot run a property where you're not maintaining it, but you're collecting that rent check every month, and you are leaving people in substandard housing. The property manager of this particular property drove up today in a convertible Jaguar while their tenants are living in squalor. That is just not going to happen anymore in our city. It's a consistent message, and it is a message that that we need to keep repeating. It's difficult in my short time in public service to keep saying things over and over and over again. It gets boring to me, but it's up to us public officials to keep the drumbeat and the mantra of today's a new day in the city, and we're not tolerating behavior that was tolerated in the past.
How long a time frame do you see for things starting to improve?
I believe that next year, the numbers are in a bad way right now, and I believe that with respect to the murder rate, actually the violent crime rate as a whole is down. But I've compared that, saying the violent crime rate is down, but the murder rate is up, to someone asking Mrs. Lincoln, other than that, how was the play? Literally. So until that murder rate is down, it's not acceptable that the other violent crime rate is down. Yes, that's good, but that's not good enough. But the numbers are up over last year. We had 95 murders in our city last year. We had 94 the year before, and we're at the rate we're going right now, we're going to top that, and that is very unfortunate. But as I said earlier, we are arresting people. I am positive about that development. I believe that that will trickle down not only in preventing those people from committing other violent crimes or other murders, people that have been arrested, but also sending the message out to the community that while you may have had a better chance of getting away with this, now it's not going to be that way. You kill somebody in the city of Richmond, you're going to pay the price for it.
Councilman Hilbert, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Richmond police cleared the 36th murder this year on Wednesday by apprehending Travis Flowers, who is accused of a murder on June 26th in the 1200 block of St. James Street. At the time of this broadcast, Richmond police have not apprehended anyone in connection with the Baskerville double homicide. This is WRIR News. That's it for this edition of Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm Lauren Ball. I'd like to thank all the volunteers who worked on this week's program: Matt Beckwith, Nancy Lee, Christopher Maxwell, Jared Ress, and Dustin Richardson. If you would like to comment on anything you've heard today, or if you would like to volunteer, send an email to news@wrir.org. Archives of WRIR News can be found by visiting our website at www.wrir.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.